Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show.
Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, we have a great episode in store today. We bring on one of my best friends, a guy that was a part of my wedding, Miguel Racinos, former Iowa Hawkeye kicker. If you listen at twice the speed, you're going to need to slow this one down. He says some big words. He is a smart guy, and he can talk for a long time. Buckle up. Let's have a day. Let's go. Buddy, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans, welcome back to episode 73 of the podcast. I'm pretty sure it's episode 73. Tyler doing the intro today. That's me, because we have a special guest in the house today. Someone who has kicked balls for the University of Iowa Hawkeyes in his former life. And he's one of my good friends. He is a lover of Japanese rice wine. He is a gamer, a player of Minecraft and Dark Souls. He is a fan of international football, the other kind of football. And he is another human who knows what it's like to kick a game-winning field goal against Nebraska.
This fucking guy has ice in his veins.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Miguel Racinos. Miguel, we're happy to have you. What's up?
Oh, I'm happy to be on, Clue. Not really much. Excited to get the call. Fill some time. Sub in for Kevin, you know, the usual.
Yeah. So, Miguel Racinos, been far too long. This episode should have happened a long time ago. Kevin is not here today. Kevin is doing real job things in real job places. He's in New York City.
My guy's in Manhattan. Yeah, he's just looks like he had a bomb ass time eating some pizza, doing a pizza review. Yep. Him and his boss seem to be potentially intoxicated. Yeah. Just, you know, it's all alleged. But it looked like they were having a good time.
I think that's fair to assume. Kevin's living the big city life. He's in New York City. And so we're going to record this episode today with Miguel. It's fairly relevant. A guy that knows Keith Duncan just as well as I do.
Miguel tells me he has some triggering insider info about the Keith Duncan scandal.
I've probably got that same info, because if we both talk to Keith,
yes,
then boys, lay it on me, because I need something to warm me up this morning.
Well, here's the thing. I want to introduce Miguel a little bit so that I want this to be his episode. We will get to the Groza talk. So this is going to be a 45 minute plus episode, probably, as Miguel munches on that off-brand honeycomb cereal.
I'm definitely going to be popping in and out then, you know, going downstairs, petting my dog.
Yeah.
Me and him both get separation anxiety from each other. So, you know, we got to always check in every once in a while, make sure each other's doing good.
Sure. And I can take, I mean, me and Miguel could one off this episode by ourselves if we had to. So, Miguel, let's start with you're a guy that is one of the most interesting people I know. You're one of the
the smartest.
Yeah, one of the smartest people I know. And there is so much to what goes into being Miguel Racinos. Take us back to 17-year-old Miguel Racinos, which is maybe even scarier than the current version of yourself. How did you make your way to Iowa City, and what was the process like for you to become a Hawkeye?
I appreciate all the compliments. Clearly, it was a wise idea to come on this podcast, building up my confidence a little bit. But so I really did not start getting recruited by Iowa until well into my senior year. I was kind of one of those guys that was a late bloomer. So, you know, I had like some D3 schools looking at me, some D2 schools, but, you know, I was fortunate enough to have some bigger performances my senior year, and leading into it, some of like the Coles camp stuff, which you're very familiar with.
Yep.
You know, I had a few good camps, competed with guys who were the top of my class and stuff like that, and won some competitions. And then
that's because you are the big leg Latino.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Let's not forget why you won. Yeah. Competition.
I forgot to intro the nicknames, but Miguel has many. Miguelito is one that you went by a lot of people. Miguexel is what I like to call you. Big Dick Miguel, the long leg Latino. There's a lot of them. We'll get into some of those backstories, but yeah, you were, I remember, because you're just a class behind Drake and I, and coming out of Mason City, I think the big one for you was you kicked a 57 yarder or something like that your senior year. Yep. Which,
yeah, it was a 58 yarder again. I think it was senior day. I want to say it was senior day
against,
and it was after that where, I got like a letter, I want to say it was, from Reese Morgan, the legend.
Of course.
And, you know, I had visited several schools, but when I went to Iowa, the thing that stood out right away, it was so funny because I distinctly remember meeting you, and you had like a wife beater and like socks with sandals on. And you look like such a dad, but you had like the snapback too. So you're like,
talking about Kluver?
Yeah.
Yeah, how bad did freshman year Kluver need his ass whooped?
Oh my god! Well, it's funny because when I met him, I'm like, God, this guy looks like the biggest fucking douchebag I've ever.
And you were right, weren't you? You were spot on. He was the biggest douchebag of all time.
It was amazing. Like, I actually have a vivid memory of seeing Kluver for the first
time. This fucking guy actually thought he was an Under Armour All American.
Well,
and the best part too was like everyone else there was in the Iowa sweats. So at first I was like, who the fuck is this guy? But Kluver's always been a pretty good shape, so I was like, he must either be on the team. Like, I suspected he was on the team.
I was just a guy hanging out with the real guys.
Holy shit. I really couldn't tell. I was like, is this a frat dude or is this like an actual player? Like, I looked more like an Iowa player, like more dressed like it than he did, because I had like all the shit on that they gave me, which was so fun to think about. But
yeah, so at least you weren't short, not athletic looking, white with a bad hairline, and not wearing Iowa shit. At least you were wearing the part.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's funny because like I didn't even notice the hairline until he like took off his snapback to like rub his head, and I was like, wow.
And you realized it disappeared a long time ago.
Really let a dad in the dorm.
So This isn't. So, okay, we'll back this up. So we're 10 minutes in and
I can check back out. I can go back.
This podcast is not the Roast Tyler Kluver podcast. All right. This is supposed to be about you, Miguel. All right. God,
but in seriousness, like when I went, I'll never forget, you know, I'm not going to get into it. I don't want to get anyone in trouble, but you know, you've read on just a ton of shit that happens in recruiting or have experienced it yourself.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I was exposed to quite a bit of that. Again, I'm not going to name any names, but like Iowa, it was very real. And you understood that right away, is that like what you see is what you get. KF is, Coach Ferentz is one of the most genuine people I've ever met.
Yep.
You know, and Doyle knows his shit inside and out, and he's very straightforward with you.
That's our godfather. Really, that's everybody of this podcast. That's our godfather.
Yep.
Exactly. And like I just remember, and like, and you guys as well. I mean, you know, I remember going to Iowa State, and it was just like, just all slaps. Like they really were. I was like, fuck these guys. You know, just all tools. And I
that's
came
tremendous. Like, that is guy. Tremendous out of yeah, you, big dick.
Like I came in with an open mind. I really did, just because, you know, I try and make my own decisions on how I view things and how I view people. I don't let other people tell me how to view anything, really. So smart. When I came in, it was an open mind, and like, my God, like playing up to the stereotype kind of thing. And I don't know if it's different now, but that was back in like 13, yeah. 14, I want to say. And I just remember like going to Iowa was completely different. Like it felt like a professionally run organization. Like you just realize like these people are here to win. They're here to do things the right way. And like, you know, even you guys, like no one kissed my ass when I walked in. It was like, this is what you're going to get. And like, if you're willing to do it, like you'll reap the rewards, which is something I really appreciated. And like pretty much like on that visit, I had already decided within the first few hours, like pretty much after meeting you guys and after meeting Coach Ferentz and Coach Doyle face to face, I realized like I don't really want to go anywhere else. So
yeah, that's
so you're already like an extremely intellectually talented kid. That's pretty well documented. But how much would you say that going through the program that you went through, like being a specialist, sometimes you may not feel like you're always like part of it. You like mm-hmm. Kluver's mentioned this, like sometimes you feel like you struggle to fit into certain groups, mm-hmm. but when you have to go through the whole program, like you guys didn't get any breaks, like you guys had to go through the workouts, you had to do the conditioning, like you guys were out there doing the shit that really sucked. How much did being a part of the program and having to go through it and experiencing things that you would have never experienced if you couldn't have been kicking balls, how much did it like increase your work ethic to improve you for the rest of your life?
The impact of that is not something you can really measure. I mean, it's so profound. Like I remember I've been told this by, you know, several members of my family multiple times, is that like, I am such a different person. Like when I came in, and Kluver can attest to this because he was in the room with me for 4 years, but I'm such a different person now than when I entered.
Yep.
And I mean, you're entirely right. Like you're put through a crucible. And it really, if you know how to handle it and if you handle things the right way, and if you see it as an opportunity for growth, as opposed to like a, you know, victim mentality, like why is this happening to me kind of shit. You will reap massive rewards. I mean, it was like the amount of just psychological growth. You know, physical is easy to see, right? You know, height, weight, whatever. You know, I grew a few inches and, you know, put on quite a few pounds. But the psychological growth is unbelievable. I mean, like just simple things in terms of like, you know, when something stressful happens, like how I handle it, you know what I mean? Like, do I just start panicking, or do I like, all right, you know, I need to put in a plan. I know how to do this. I've done hard things before, you know, stuff like that.
Just remember, you've kicked game winners against supposedly one of the greatest programs to ever exist in college football. So nothing else is really hard once you've shown that you've got ice running all the way through to the tip of your meat.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's funny you say that, because I had someone ask me, you know, I'll just make this brief, but I had somebody ask me, like, do you really get nervous anymore? And I'm like, it's not that I don't get nervous anymore. It's just that one, I know how to handle it because I've been forced to know how to handle it. And then two, you know, being able to draw on things you've done in your life that ended well in those types of situations, like, give you such a massive confidence boost.
For sure.
You know, because whether it be, you know, the 41 yarder, you know, another kick that I know we remember fondly, Kluve, is that 38 or 9 yarder in the Pinstripe Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
When we were I was laughing when we were running out because I'm like, this is fucking stupid.
The one stepper, baby.
That was like,
So what Miguel's talking about is we played on an ice rink.
This is legendary, people. This is unbelievably hard.
So we ran out for the Pinstripe Bowl in December of 2017, and we were on a legitimate ice rink. I've never played on a surface like that. Miguel, I know, it was something that we had never experienced. Not something that you can ever prepare for. It is hard to explain how big of a factor your footing is when you are a kicker, punter, and even a long snapper. I tried to get down into my stance, and a long snapper stance is obviously wider than when you're just standing up straight, and my feet started to slide out into the splits. I could not anchor my feet, which is where you start when you are if you think about it, the plant foot is almost more important. Miguel could talk about this. The plant foot is almost more important than the foot that's actually kicking the ball.
Yeah.
And it was all fucked up that day. And Miguel, basically what happened was, he can talk a little bit about it, he couldn't take his normal approach to the ball. He would have slipped and been on his ass. He had to anchor himself in such a way that he basically got one step, and that way it decreased the momentum enough that he still had enough leg for the field goal, but not enough to send him flying up like Charlie Brown. That, along with Keith's game against Iowa State this year, two of the more impressive kicking performances that I've ever seen in my life, and I was a part of one of them.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm going to make this brief because I could talk about this for a long time, but it was – kicking in that game was by far – I'm really trying to think of any other just circumstance in my life where I was tested – in terms of like both a technical perspective of, you know, a specialty of mine and trying in like almost like a theoretical, because when we were out there, I think I made one kick.
Yeah. Wait, the warm-up was
like
horrible.
And it was cause I was trying full steps and it was, I mean, again, unless you've done it, it's really hard to understand, but I'll try. It's like, we literally couldn't plant. I mean, my foot would slide out from under me. Their kickoff specialist blew out his knee warming up on a kickoff.
Yep.
On like one of his first kickoffs because his foot slid out from under him, hyperextended his knee. And so it was the only time in my career where I actually felt like fear from like actual potential, like physical harm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like it was just so unknown.
It was so unknown. And like, I remember Coach Ferentz had asked me, because they always ask like, what's your line? Like, where are you feeling comfortable from? And I told him, I was like, honestly, coach, like aside from PATs,
yeah,
this is a very low percentage game. I mean, if it's on the hash, I don't know how we're going to handle this. You know, I have an idea, which is one stepping.
Yeah.
I have an idea, but I mean, like I've practiced one steps to like warm up straight on.
It's a stretching exercise.
That's not something that you do like seriously, like I'm actually trying to make this kick as opposed to like I'm just trying to loosen up, you know, let alone in a game. We'd never tried like a snap and hold one step because that's just
throws off the rhythm, the timing, everything.
Yeah. It's just not.
Coach Ferentz definitely did not mention this to the rest of the squad.
No one knows.
We had no idea that we had zero faith in our special teams.
Like, I remember. Yeah. I remember going out there I forget where we were, but we were on like the 22 or like 21. I'd have to go back, but we were kind of, you know, just realized that people were thinking about a field goal and they were the only ones thinking about the field goal. If you looked at Kluver, Colton and I, we were all sitting on the bench like,
hey, guys,
good luck. You got it.
We're not going out there. So
yeah,
this is four down territory, man.
And I remember Woods came up to me and he's like, you know, what do you think? And I'm like, what do you mean what I think? You know, like, this is a fucking terrible idea. And he's like, no, seriously. And I'm like, dude, this is like a single percentage type of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm somebody where I'm very, you know, at that stage, I was very confident. Like, you know, if my life's on the line, I'm going to fucking bang it through the post. But if you had asked me then, I'd be like, fuck no. You know, fuck no. Like, this is a bad idea.
I
remember like laughing. I was laughing when we were running out there because I'm like, this is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Like, this is stupid.
Well, it was one of those things where, and I've talked about it before on the podcast. You've listened to it. I've told the people, the listeners, how individualized, really until I left. Woods came in and took over heavily after I was gone. But up until when I left, the special teams was, we ran it. We were running ourselves. Yep. All right, the mindset, the coaching, the cues, everything was self-based. You had to do it by yourself. And I remember going out there and looking at you and Colt and just saying, because I'm in the senior leadership, you know, last game of my career, I gotta somehow piece this together and get us to think about it in the right way, get us in the right mindset. And I just looked back and I told you guys, hey, this is just practice. We're going out here. This field goal does not matter. All right, we're toying around, and this is just an experiment because that's the only way that we're going to think about this and get through this. Because if we put any real pressure on that, it was going to add too much. There was already too many factors, and I've never been more excited after banging those through that day. That was incredible. Miguel, so obviously we could talk about individual kicks for years, but right. I want to get back to Drake mentioned it. You mentioned it. Iowa changed you. And I think it changes everybody, but being a guy who is in the room with you for 4 years, and boy, do I miss those times just sitting here talking with you. It brings back the memories. I imagine this is what it's going to be like when B Ross comes on and Drake is sitting with B Ross. It just takes you right back.
Old B Ross had some wild fucking times.
Yeah. So Miguel, I noticed as an elder specialist, and I think the program really noticed this as well. You came in and I know that you're not going to be offended by this, but I don't want it to sound offensive to the fans because they just don't know our relationship. You were very individual and kind of by yourself and a little bit weird and just not socially able to connect early in your career. Mm-hmm. And I know that was a big thing in breaking down the barrier for you, and it clicked somewhere along the line. You were the starter for the 17 season, my senior season, and the 16 season, right? And before that in 15, you had Marshall to sit behind and what a great leader and fellow specialist to kind of learn from. Where did it click over for you? Because I know that at some point people would come up to me, Drake, guys that I lived with, Kevin, they would come up to me and be like, how did Miguel become this savage all of a sudden? You went from this guy that everyone thought was a little bit weird. They didn't really know. You're so intellectual that, like, you are and were smarter than everybody on the team, like, academically, and just, like, it didn't fit in. And then all of a sudden, it was like one off season, you just started playing Xbox with everybody, and all of a sudden, you were, like, one of the boys. And everyone was like, where did Miguel come from? Like, he's such a savage, he's banging kicks through. What, was there something specific that turned it over and clicked for you?
I'm going to think about this for a second because I know what I want to say. I just want to think about how I'm going to say it. It was a bit of a process. I'm not going to get into the earlier part too much, just obviously because of time and just because I don't want to get too specific. But I had struggled a lot when I was younger with bullying. And it, you know, I'm someone where I'm very cerebral.
Yeah.
And so, and I've never, I mean, you guys can attest, like, it's, I've never been somebody who's been naturally good at a lot of social situations. Like, I've had to work really, really hard to be good at social situations.
Yeah. I tried to break you in and open you up for 4 years.
Yes. But, you know, this is something I struggled with a lot, and, you know, football for a lot of guys is an opportunity for them to go out there and, you know, meet a bunch of like-minded people, a bunch of, you know, friends and stuff like that. And, like really be themselves. But for me, it was never really that way. I was somebody where, like, I joined a team because I lost a bet. Like, that's why I started football. There was no like love for the sport. There was none of that. You know, I had some friends on the team, but like pretty much through, and again, I'm not going to name names, but as I got older through my high school career, like from, you know, Mason City was a town that never really had a kicker, especially never one that just wanted to kick. And so I faced a lot of backlash on that. And I'm sure I didn't help myself because, again, I'm socially awkward. Like, it's hard for me to read some social situations. But, like, I took a lot of heat from my team. You know, again, part of it was just my attitude just because, you know, just the way I am. But I never connected, really. Like, I don't talk to any of my high school teammates or coaches, like, if I can fucking help it. I'd try and talk. There were some guys that were, like, nice guys, like, really nice guys. That were kind to me, but it's just one of those where I don't really look back on those days fondly. Like, people want to talk about my high school, like, kicking days and stuff like that, and I just never really want to talk about it. You know, things.
Hey, man, you know who else got bullied when they were younger?
Who?
This guy.
Yes. Yes.
I know what that shit's like.
That's why we're both fucking savages. Got to run through the crucible, babe. Yeah.
I know what that shit's like.
But you know, it got better as I, you know, my senior year, just because I had success, right? So, you know, success kind of changes things a little bit. People want to be a part of that. But then when I got to Iowa, it was one of those where, like, you know, everything was up. I was experiencing things I never really had before, you know, kind of the strength program under Doyle. As someone who didn't really even lift weights, and now all of a sudden I'm having to perform at a high level in terms of conditioning and fitness. And that was something I had never been exposed to in football, and just the academic requirements. Cause, you know, I was double major.
You're fucking genius. Jimmy Neutron.
So like handling that. And then, of course, you know, Iowa practices are serious, you know? So it was just a lot of workload. And, you know, I just had a very difficult time trusting people. Very, very difficult time. Like, even though I recognized you guys were good guys, it was always one of those, like, even now, like, when I put myself out there, I'm fully expecting to be rejected. Even when I talk to people, like, I'm expecting something bad to happen. I'm expecting, like, me to say something poorly and then have to be able to recover from that. So, you know, that's sometimes why you notice some of my weird mannerisms make a little more sense now.
Yeah.
But so it took a long time for me to really be like, okay, you know, am I really going to do this? Am I really, you know, because after my poor camp.
Because let's back up for a second, because the name of the show is the Washed Up Walk-Ons.
Sure.
And my boy, you are just as much as we, washed up walk-on. You walked onto the team. You did not get a scholarship to go to the University of Iowa.
I did.
So you signed up for this. All this stuff you're talking about, you signed up.
No, and that's the thing. It's like, I never... What I want you guys to understand is I never, like, blamed anybody for anything. Like, I don't blame anybody for anything. You know, like, life is what it is. Bad things happen. Good things happen. You know, it's all what you make of it. It's all how you deal with things.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not looking to make any excuses. I'm not looking for any pity or for anything. It's just simply telling you kind of the genealogy of how this happened.
Yeah, I love it.
And then, you know, my third year, I kicked very poorly. It was kind of when things were coming to a head in a way. I hadn't really gotten any better with struggling with the psychological demand of just life, essentially, you know, school, football, personal life.
It's a lot.
And the fact, you know, that I didn't really have many people that I could really call friend here, which, again, my own fault, just because I struggle to trust people. You know, and at this point I had developed ulcers, which ended up just being like the final nail in the coffin that just absolutely fucked me, because then I couldn't sleep.
Damn, dude, I remember that. I forgot about that.
I was throwing up blood like every other day. And it was hell. I mean, I was going through like unreal mood swings, and just, it was very, very, very bad situation. And that had been going on for like a year. I had talked to the medical staff about it, but there was a bit of a communication issue I'm not going to get into. So I didn't receive treatment for a while. And at that point, there's a critical point. The point you're talking about was after camp, I sat in my room, you know, and I knew Keith was going to start, 'cause obviously, but, I sat in my room and I thought to myself, like, what the fuck am I going to do about this? I'm like, this is unacceptable. I was like, the way that this has been going on, I'm like, I hate myself. I hate the way things are going. Like, you know, I can't see this trending, what, you know, upwards in any way. Like some of the workouts we had that summer, like I was not in a good way, you know, during and after the workout, just because of my condition and, you know, just everything that kind of goes along with that. And I was thinking to myself, like, dude, if I keep going this way, like I might fucking die. Like, this is not good. You know what I mean? Like, it's bad. Like, this is kind of like not worst case scenario, but like a very bad scenario.
I remember it all now.
And I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do about this? Because I'm like, either I'm going to quit at this point, either I am going to finally have enough and quit, or I'm, you know, I might literally fucking, you know, get hospitalized here. Like, there were times, you know, you start to see the darker and darker blood, right? Starts to think, maybe I'm going to perforate my stomach here. You know, like, that's a very bad scenario to be in.
Only Miguel would come on and use the word perforate.
Exactly. Sorry, puncture, you know, like basically.
I know, yeah.
So I really had to think about it. You know, what am I going to do about this? And so I met with Carmen, who's a sports psychologist, and I had already had some ideas. You know, I'm never somebody that wants other people to do things for me. You know, I always want to be the shot caller. And, you know, we had a good talk. I kind of bounced some ideas off of her, and essentially what it boiled down to, and she, you know, she's like, she encouraged me to, you know, trust my teammates and trust my coaches and kind of be more myself, which at the time was a terrifying prospect. Like, now it seems funny to think about, but at the time it was terrifying. I'm like, you know, how's Kluve going to really react when he sees the real me, you know?
Yeah.
How's he really going to react? Because once again, you know, I had pretty much shut myself off for a long time. Like, the last time I had really been myself was like in middle school and high school, and that hadn't gone over as well.
Right.
So those memories still stick strong. And you know, now the ante is up. Like, I respect you guys way more than I respected them. So like, if I was rejected by you, then the pain of being rejected by you would far supersede the pain of being rejected by them. You see how this works?
I right? see it all.
And, that was really the critical moment when things started to turn around. And the other thing was,
you're too smart for your own good, my guy.
Yeah.
I just want to interject, listeners. If you're sitting here thinking either one, this is incredible. Miguel is so much more intellectual and cerebral than I knew he ever was, and this is so interesting. You're right. And two, I listened to this shit for 2.5 hours every single day for 4 years, and yeah. I am smarter because of Miguel Racinos. My vocabulary is 3 times as big because of this guy. So, yeah, I fully understand. But anyway, continue, Miguel. You came.
Well, you do me a great honor, and I appreciate that. But anyway, where was I? Oh yeah. So the one, you know, and I'm going to make this very brief, but the one position where I had always felt like I could be myself, and it really was my natural position. Like, as much as I hate to say it, you know, I've been pretty good at kicking a ball. But
say it, Miguel.
Where, yeah, I'm a fucking savage, bro.
Say it.
But the position where if I had been given a chance, like, I'm not somebody who normally says these kinds of things, like you can attest, but I truly believe it, is like the position, if I would have been given a chance where I really could have been, like, it would be the goalkeeper in soccer. Like, that really is. I mean, like, dead serious, you know, like, it was a position where everything just felt natural. Like, a lot of things with kicking, I had to force myself to be comfortable with. And it, you know, it, a lot of it really was not like straightforward early on. And you saw like how much technical change I went through. I mean, just in the program.
Yeah.
But that was the one position where I felt like I could be myself, and it didn't matter really what anyone else thought or just how anything else went. Like, even when things went poorly, I still felt confident, you know, which I could never have said as a kicker until I made the switch. And so we worked on that, just like figuring out how to translate that mentality to kicking. And like, you know, you started to see it, right? Yeah. You know, like that one time I argued with Wallace when he's like,
yeah,
the kick wasn't in. I'm like, what are you fucking talking about? Were you paying attention? Yeah. It was fucking in, you know, stuff like that, where it's, you have kind of that ferocity too. Cause as the keeper, it's the.
Hey guys. Yep, it's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify. One of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline, wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app. Search for Wash Up Walk-Ons on Spotify or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Wash Up Walk-Ons.
It's the same thing where, you know, a lot of people really have no fucking idea what they're talking about when it comes to your position, and yet they all try and tell you like how to play your position, right? It's similar in that regard. Right. You can get shit on a lot. You know, if you make one mistake, everyone sees it. So it's kind of the same thing where you're on a bit of an island in a way.
Yeah.
The difference is it's more of a position of leadership. And so that felt natural to me. So like one was opening up to you guys and feeling more comfortable in the team, you know, realizing how to integrate, you know, who I was in such a way to the Iowa program that actually like makes sense and functions, right? Because I can't just be talking about Minecraft for you know, 10 hours, even though I might want to, right?
Yeah, only with me and Brady Ross. Yeah.
Yes, so stuff like that. And then also finding out how to translate my skill set that I was so comfortable with as a goalkeeper to kicker as much as possible. And like people started to see as well, like my celebrations after kicks, you know, when I would like jump up and give like a fist pump or something like that, or
good old
like trying, like, Penn State, trying to get you guys hyped up, stuff like that. Or in 2018. So sorry, you weren't there, but just things like that, where allowing that kind of competitive spirit and that like intensity to like, basically allow it to flourish.
You banged home a 48-yarder one day in camp when everybody was in the mob around you, and it got us out of something. And right. It was that day. It yes. was that day that I knew that you had the hammer cock and you were going to split the posts all year.
I remember that hit too, because I remember hitting it and I fucking hammered it. And I looked up and I was like, holy fuck. Because I saw it and like I didn't even need to look. I was that's it.
That thing skied over the cherry picker camera stand, and that was a good day in practice. All that came to a head, and then all of a sudden you were Miguel and you started for that 17-18 season. Talk about once you got past all that and you were the guy, and now you're kicking field goals, you're an Iowa Hawkeye, people know who Miguel Racinos is, you're more in the spotlight. Talk about all of that leading up to and including that last kick in Kinnick versus Nebraska your senior year.
Gotcha. Well, you know, leading up to it, it was funny because I, you know, I had a really, really good camp, as you can attest. It was like 90 something percent, which is insane.
You went absolutely crazy in camp that year.
And going into that season, what was funny though, is I never, because, you know, I got better at knowing how to phrase certain stressful situations in such a way that I could like handle them better. Mm-hmm. So I never even allowed the thought to enter my mind that I could be the starter. Like even when, you know, cause Keith was doing well, but at that point it was pretty clear cut who the guy was going to be, you know, at least looking back on it.
Right.
But I never allowed myself to think that. So when I got named the starter, I was actually completely floored. It was just like, what? Yeah, I remember looking at the paper thinking like there was something wrong with the paper.
You came to me and said something.
Yeah, and I was like, I can't believe I'm starting, you know, and I went out and, you know, I was kind of thrown for a loop. And I remember the Monday practice going out there and just absolutely sucking ass.
Yeah, you were bad.
Like it was like 1 of 5 and it was like the worst looking 1 of 5 you've seen. And I remember sitting down on Tuesday, the day after, and just thinking, like, taking a second to enjoy it. Because I'm somebody that I never really enjoy anything. I'm always just like, okay, what's the next thing I got to do? What's, you know, like, what's the next
thing? I think people might be getting that over this interview.
Yeah. And I remember sitting there and thinking, like, how incredible is this? How incredible is this? A year ago, you were like
ready to quit,
genuinely worried about your health. You're wondering, should I quit? Like, is it because, you know, one, is this, you know, too much? Two, like, am I really going to be able to, you know, sit through two more years of this? Just a lot of that. And just taking a second to be like, it's amazing what you've just done. It is absolutely amazing. Like, no one on that team, well, maybe Clue. No one on that team would have been like, yeah, you know, I think Miguel is going to start next year. Nobody.
I think you're right.
Nobody would have thought that. Nobody in the – no, none yeah. of the fans. My family probably didn't even fucking think that. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking – that is like
– I'm definitely in that category because yes. when Keith banged it through the post against Michigan, I was pretty much sure he was going to kick yes. every field goal until he walked out of the place.
Yes, and you were right to think that. I mean, it's not like that – like, it was very straightforward as to why people would think that. And I just remember sitting there and thinking, you know, that is what you've done is absolutely incredible. Cause it's not like Keith rolled over and took it. I mean, like, he kicked well.
Yeah, he did.
Like, it's not like he's terrible. You know, like, just enjoy this for a second. Just what a Herculean comeback this is. Like, it's unbelievable. And I remember sitting there and thinking, like, no matter what, for this game on Saturday, I'm the starter. Like, they might replace me after that, but this game, I am the starter. And just go out there and enjoy it. Like, you know, after everything you've sacrificed to get to this point, it'd be a shame if you don't just, like, take a few mental snapshots to just let it sink in and realize what you've been able to do. Like, even if this is the only game you start. And the most kick and, like, that game was kind of – was a little crazy because that first PAT was like one of the stupidest things I've ever been a part of as a specialist unit. Just one of the most fluky things where normally my tell used to be is I'd look up at the uprights or I'd look down at the spot, look up at the uprights, give the nod to Colton, and then we're on. And what happened was I looked at the spot and there was an error in communication where Colton thought I nodded. And I looked up as he looked to you for the snap. And, like, it was perfectly synchronized. It was literally like yep. this.
And let me,
so neither one of us realized what was happening.
And let me tell you, when Colton looks at me, it's fucking go time, boys.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're not looking at me. You're looking at him.
I'm ready to get and that ball out of my hands.
I'm looking up, and I'll never forget this. I see, like, a white blur. And for a split second, I'm thinking, like, wow, I can't believe he jumped off sides that much and is still running towards Colton. And then I realized, like, a split second after that, holy fuck, the ball was snapped. And so I went up there and kicked it. And this is how you want to talk about, like, how your mind slows down. I remember thinking, like, okay, I know how to kick the ball because, I used to not be very good. I know how to kick the ball so that I can bend it, right? I can bend the ball. And so I was like, this guy is literally going to be at the spot when I kick this ball. I'm thinking about this as I'm taking my steps. Right, this is like time slows down. And so I hit it and I curved it around him and made the PAT. And that was my first PAT as a starter. And I remember I was like freaked out because after that, the moment hits you and you're like, how the fuck did I just do that kind of thing?
And it's such a subtle thing. Some people might have noticed it in the crowd, but it's such a subtle thing that Coach Woods, Coach Wallace, none of them even
knew. No one knew
that we fucked our cadence up.
I was talking to Colt. I'm like, what? I was yelling at his face. What the fuck happened? How did that happen?
I came off the field and knew something was wrong because you just didn't step right. You didn't step on.
No, because I like threw my arms forward. Right. I wasn't even leaned in.
On pace.
I was,
like, and so
I literally see that.
I came off the field and just brought both of you aside, just the three of us. And I was like, okay, first one's done. Let's get it fucking together, okay? We can't do that every time.
That settled us down a little bit because we were like, motions were running hot after that one. That was Colton's first hold, like being the guy as well.
Yeah.
And that was like, I remember thinking after that, well, I mean, nothing else can happen in this game that's more fucked up than that. Like, that's like something, well, again, a situation you never prepare for. And the most, probably the biggest rush I've ever gotten a kick, though, was actually in that game. And again, like, no one remembers this game. It was against Wyoming. We beat him by 17 points. But was that 44-yarder?
Yeah.
45-yarder. And it was my first field goal as a starter. And I remember thinking like, God, you know, like, if I remember sitting on the sideline thinking like, oh shit. Cause it's like the end of the game and you're starting to wind down a little bit. And then you're like, oh, they're going to make me kick this here. All right. You know, get locked in. And we went out there and I just remember thinking like, just fucking smash it. And then I hit it. And it was like, honestly, I absolutely fucking hammered that ball.
Yeah, it was good from 60.
If you want to see it, like, I think my highlights are floating around on YouTube somewhere. Like, if you want to, it is over the uprights from 44 yards. Like, that was good from, like, another 15 yards easy. That was the most hype. I mean, I remember they were kind of making fun of, or not making fun of me, but they, like, poked fun a little bit on the meeting because I was, like, celebrating for a field goal that goes from 21-7 to 24-7, you know, it was funny. Because, like, everyone else was relaxed, and I'm, like, the only person that's, like...
And you're just excited as hell because you banged through a perfect 44-yarder.
After that, it was honestly just, like, kind of that mentality of just taking every game like it's, you know, like it's a gift, because it kind of is. You know, it feels that way. It's something that I earned, but at the same time, it's something I never thought I'd have.
For sure.
You know, and then there was the Northwestern game where I'm the only kick I actually missed that year. I missed in the Northwestern game that I had to respond with that like 48-yarder.
Yeah, to put us
by the game.
Yeah.
And it was a weird situation too, where like we were supposed to go for it, and then all of a sudden we got a penalty and then they just sent me out there. So it was a really fast turnaround. I had to like get locked in really quickly.
And we had to make it or else we weren't going to overtime.
Yeah.
And so we kind of just looked at each other quick like,
shit,
let's go. Like, if we won that game, that's a game-winning field goal. And so we kind of looked at each other like, oh, well, we have to go make it.
Yeah, and I just remember the thing I remember the most about that was like the sudden urge of having to throw up because it was such a weird turnaround. Like, I wasn't expecting it at all because it was literally like fourth and inches.
Yeah,
and it's like, okay, well, you know, we'll get this.
And then once you were the guy, it was awesome. I mean, you found that flow. And then, sadly, I had to leave for your second full year and final year of starting. And Jimmy stepped in, Jackson Subert. Yeah. I call him Jimmy if I reference Jimmy. And you guys have another great year, and it finishes in Kinnick in a rainy, cold, shitty day. And you bang it through to finish off the Huskers. What was that day like? Senior day, everything.
You know, it's funny because honestly, like that day, there was a day earlier in the season that was really like my, because I ended up kicking towards the back end. I had a rough game against Iowa State, but that was kind of a turning point for me. But I'll just talk about the Nebraska game because that's what you asked.
Yeah.
And so for the Nebraska game, it was funny because, you know, for senior day, I don't know. It's not that it wasn't emotional. It was just I was so concerned with what I had to do that it didn't really all set in until afterwards, like well afterwards, like the day after, like kind of what had happened. I was so concentrated on just like, okay, you know, Nebraska is going to give us a good fight just because they always do. Except for that time we annihilated them. In Memorial Stadium, which was hilarious, but
and all the other times that we annihilated them, but I mean, who's really keeping count?
But you know, going into the game, honestly, and I just remember the worst miss I had of the season came in that game, like without question. It was my 37-yarder, and I remember going into there, and I knew what I wanted to do, like I felt good about the kick and everything, but I went out there and I just fucking had a technical mistake, which hadn't happened to me like all year. And I just remember thinking, like, just being so fucking mad. Like, I was on the sideline, and, like, people were saying shit to me, and I don't even really remember them scoring or getting the 2-point or anyone talking to me or anything like that. I don't remember any of that. because I was literally pacing up and down the sidelines. I'm like, if I don't start pacing, I'm going to like throw my helmet into the stands. Like, I was so mad that it was like, you know exactly what I'm talking about, Drake. The red haze just starts to slip over. And like,
I've been so mad before. Yes. That the head coach had to pull me off somebody on the sideline. So yes, I do understand what you're speaking of.
And like, there were coaches and players that were trying to talk to me, and I was literally like, get the fuck out of my way kind of thing. And I was just pacing up and down the sideline. And I distinctly remember, like, you know, I said this in the press conference, and I think people were just kind of like, thought I was bullshitting or something like that. But I really had this like premonition where it's like, they're going to score and get the 2-point. I'm going to get another shot here. And I'm like, I'm not going to fuck this one up kind of thing.
That's great.
And I really believe that. Like, I didn't even watch the game because it really felt like I knew what was going to happen. So I literally have no memory from that 37 yarder to the 41 yarder, except for just me trying to keep myself calm. And,
what a mental battle that was, I bet.
I'll tell you what, man, that plays strongly into all the stories we've told about how the times where we didn't know if we were going to make it through shit and how ridiculously hard it was. Like, it hardens your mentality
to the
point where you do believe that you're going to be able to get it done. It takes the anxiety away and you have a true belief in yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go.
That's not entirely true. I do have one memory I think you guys will appreciate. I've said this to a few people, but as I was pacing down, I distinctly remember, like, all of a sudden I remember, like, holy shit, I have to take a piss, like, right now. Like, right now I have to take a piss. And I looked over, and this is, like, the play right before Nate's pass to TJ to get us in range.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I'm going to have to kick, possibly have to kick here in a few seconds. I'm not about to miss an opportunity for a game winning field goal because I'm going to go take a piss. I will tell you right now, talking yourself into pissing your pants is like one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. Like, genuinely one of the hardest things. And like, the best part is people are trying to talk to me, and I'm like, don't fucking talk to me. I'm like trying to look up in the air and not look at anyone in the face to like do this. And it was pouring rain, so no one fucking knew, you know? And it, like, that was a little funny, but at the time I was so mad I didn't even think about it. I was just like trying to get myself to do it. And then, like, pretty much after I finally got myself to do it, then I had to run on there and go kick the
So football. You're telling me right now on the Wash Up Walk-Ons that before Miguel Racinos hit a game winner to send Nebraska home, he pissed his pants on the sideline.
Absolutely.
That's incredible.
So, Migs, I'm going to come to your backup right now before anybody can say anything funny and let the Washed Up Walk-Ons know that I pissed myself many, many times.
I tweeted it earlier
There were many a trainer that handed me a water bottle as I soaked myself in piss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tweeted about it earlier in the year. It happens way more than people would think it does to tons of people. Not me. Because I'm liable to just head to the locker room real quick.
When you mix pregame coffee with caffeinated Tylenol
and a ton of water
mixed with some other things I may or may not have put into my system on a Iowa football Saturday. Sometimes, man, you got to piss and you got to piss now.
Yeah.
Miguel, we're running down on the time here. I want to talk about two more things. And I want to take this first one back. The second one is going to be Keith and the Groza. The first one, I want to run it back. You said, and this is like a deeper question. You said about how you kind of were bullied when you were in middle school, high school, social kind of awkwardness, all this stuff made you feel it was a very alone feeling. And it is for a lot of, basically everyone, that's how bullying kind of works. It makes you feel alone and not really sure how to deal with things. Describe maybe the bond it created between you and I and you and the rest of the specialists and just the specialist group as a whole, because to some extent, and I don't want the listeners to take this the wrong way, but if there is any, it's not bullying by any means, but if there's any buddy who gets more shit on the team than anyone else, it's the specialists. And to some extent,
1,000%.
Right. And get, you know, taken the wrong way, so, you know, if it's a bad day, you're having a bad day and you just don't want to hear it, and someone doesn't say it in the right tone. Some days it did feel like, damn, like I don't really deserve the shit that I'm getting right now about just being a specialist. Like I can't control that. And that's kind of similar. Like that's it kind of is what makes the specialist the specialist. Like we all take that shit, and just as a group, we go back to the lounge and play a game of pool and talk shit about everybody else having to sit through meetings while we get to watch TV and play video games or pool or whatever. And it ends up being just fine. But talk about how that kind of bonded, you know, that brings together a group of guys in the specialist room and what that meant to you being in that room.
Well, yeah, that's a pretty loaded question. But I would agree with you. I mean, there was definitely, especially, you know, I'll speak to my own specific group here in the specialist, the kickers, because that's kind of the one, and of course with you, but in Jackson, but
right.
And Colton as well. But the ones that really, the bonds in that, in what you're kind of describing, the way your question is phrased, really prompts me to think of my relationships with Keith and with Marshall.
Yeah.
And what I would tell you is a lot of it is just the fact that you're all kind of in this great undertaking together. You know, a lot of people ask me, how could you have like such a good relationship with Keith given kind of like the back and forth nature? You know, it's surprising to them because it's a competitive environment.
Right.
I understand that. But the thing is that when we would go out there for a period or for kicking, you know, win the game kind of thing or whatever in practice, in a lot of ways, it felt like us kind of against the world like if we missed a kick, like if I missed a kick, everyone was getting bitched out on the specialist.
Everyone.
And if Keith missed a kick, it was the same thing. So you really started to support each other and realize that everyone was instrumental in the success of the group.
Right.
You know what I mean? To avoid, because we're an easy target for a lot of reasons. And so, you know, of course, to kind of try and avoid just being the group that's just getting shit on all the time. And of course, personal pride. There's a lot of things that go into it, but going out there, you really do feel like it's us. We're a team. It's almost like a team within a team. You know what I mean? Like it's us. And so like,
absolutely. Your guys' group is a little bit of a team within a team. There's no doubt.
And so, you know, that it makes a massive impact on you as a young guy going in. Like when, you know, Marshall's a guy where he's got like a really hard exterior, but like once you work under there, it's a little softer. And so like once I had an
8-hour ride to and from Nashville with Marshall. We went to Ike's bachelor party together. And there were a couple situations that I actually didn't put us in. We were just driving down the road and you know how people cannot be paying attention doing stupid shit. There's a couple situations where I would have liked to have thought a kicker with enough ice water in his veins to hit 57 yarders, game winners, would have a little bit more ice in his veins on the highway. My guy was jumping out of the car seat when anybody was about to merge into us or anything. Like, relax, my guy. I have it.
that's a good memory. Yeah, Marshall. Yeah, he's quite a character. But you know, as a young guy, like when Marshall tells you after a good day like that, you know, that's good. You know, kind of you brought pride to the group kind of thing. Like that means a lot. And like even when things were going poorly for me, like when Keith and Caleb kicked well, I tried to tell them like, you know, you guys are doing a good job. You know, I'm not doing so well. I'll try and pick it up, but you guys are really carrying the group right now, that kind of thing. And that means a lot. Like that's how you kind of build those relationships. And, you know, there's certain moments, of course, that stick out in your mind where like if I'm kicking poorly and then Keith, you know, and I'm getting shit on by everyone in KF's like, oh, you guys even practice this shit? What the fuck are we doing? You know, that kind of thing. And then like, you know, I'll go walk back over there and Keith's like, hey, you're good, man. Like, shake it off. Like, damn good kicker, that kind of thing. Or I do the same thing for him. You know, you try to piss me off, you know, that kind of thing. And so like, you really grow like as a group. And, you know, like when I would make or miss a kick, like what the only, going to the sideline, the only person whose feedback I ever gave a shit about was Keith's. And Keith has told me essentially the same thing where it's like, we'd go back and they're like, you know, pretty much the first thing we'd always ask each other is like, what'd you see? You know? and
that's awesome.
Just stuff like that, where you really you have a deep respect for the other individual and like everything that they've done. You also realize like they're a colleague in a lot of ways, yeah. And it becomes a bit of a brotherhood. I mean, a lot of people ask like, why are all Iowa kickers in the Ferentz era? Pretty much all of us are just such savages that have started, and that's why. It's because like you go through that crucible, and then like the one guy, you know, like our legacy as Iowa kickers is not the awards we win. It's pretty much, it's the next guy in line. That's our legacy.
Absolutely. I feel that 100% with the snapping kind of, family tree. Yeah,
exactly.
The baptism by fire that an 18-year-old Keith Duncan took in the Summit was
I just remember telling
you are battle hardened after you make that kick and go through that night at Summit. Nothing, you're untouchable.
And the podcast makes its way almost an hour in back around to the final topic of discussion, KD3. Sure. We're 4 days post Lou Groza Award announcement that was given to Rodrigo Blankenship of Georgia. Miguel, I just want to hear your thoughts on that situation.
Okay, I'm going to start with a statement. I'm going to have to explain the statement, so no one give me any shit here. I wasn't surprised. And the reason why I wasn't surprised is because these people who vote on the Groza and on the majority of national awards don't really fucking know anything. Like, they really don't. Like, if you looked at the statistics, like, even if you take the SEC championship where he had a shit game, you just throw that out because I think the voting had been done
by then.
It was done
the day before, yeah.
There's no metric.
Which, I mean, throw out the fucking votes and redo it. I mean, exactly. Come on.
That's why I think
the guy went 1-for-3.
I think these awards should be given out at the end of the year, personally, but like after everything's said and done. But anyway. But like, there's no metric that at least makes any sense to somebody like me who's actually done it. There's no metric that makes any sense to put him in front of Keith. There's literally nothing. Like, people are like, oh, he made 350-yard field goals. I'm like, yeah, he made 350-yard field goals in SEC weather. I'd rather have that than a 42-yarder in Big Ten weather.
I was just going to say, I would rather take the unit. I would rather take the unit, 55-yarders in 75 degrees, no wind, all day, than 35 yards in November in Iowa. I'll take 55, 60-yarders all day. I will put McGexel. And the reason I call him McGexel is because for some reason, Greg Morris could not find Miguel a jersey that fit him. And so Miguel wore the baggiest XL jersey for five years in practice. So he's Miguel XL Racinos. I would take Miguel, Colton holding, and me snapping, and I will put us at 60 yards for every kick rather than down in SEC weather than 40 yards in November windy, snowy conditions. But
yeah, I mean, the general public just doesn't understand like how much extra thinking and how much extra analyzing goes into a kick when there's like a 20-mile-an-hour crosswind or when it's pouring rain, you know, or and you're on the pinstripe bowl or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Key's situation where it's like a wind bowl and it's cold as shit.
Yeah.
Like, people have no concept of how that is way more difficult. I mean, like, just going out there and hitting a 50-yarder with no wind is like, you know, it's just go out there and hit it. There's really nothing to overanalyze.
No.
This is one of the, I don't know if this is one of the things you were told, but they really tried to, one of those voters really tried to tell Keith, can you fucking believe that? Really tried to tell Keith it's harder to kick in the SEC because it's humid. I'm like, are you fucking serious? Like, that is one of the stupidest things. Like, literally, I've heard a lot of stupid shit in my life and I've said a lot of stupid shit. There's a top 10 list that exists somewhere. And I'm telling you right now, it's getting votes for the top 10 list. Because that was like so fucking dumb. I thought he was kidding at first. I was like, there's no way. Like, he's just pulling my leg.
Keith told me a lot of things. The night, about 12:30 a.m., the night of the award, I was asleep. So Friday morning, I woke up to it. He said, remind me to call you tomorrow, and I'll tell you what the committee told me. And so I text him the next day. I said, please don't tell me that they told you that you should have won, but they had to vote for Rodrigo. And that's not what happened. He told me a lot of things that this guy or these guys on the committee said at the after show dinner party. The most infuriating one was that most of the voters did not even look at the stats or the actual watch any of the kicks from any of the kickers because it was such an easy choice that Rodrigo was the winner that they didn't have to look at the actual statistics. That's what this guy told Keith to his face. Another thing that Keith told me,
that makes me want to shoot somebody.
Yeah. And I might get Keith in trouble for actually telling me this, but I feel like it doesn't fucking matter because everyone should.
Who gives a fuck?
Yeah. The other thing he told me was that at the dinner in Orlando about 3 days before the award, he said that probably 50 of the committee members went up to Rodrigo, introduced themselves, and said, great to see another SEC player in the running.
Yep.
It was a stacked vote. Like that. I'm convinced that if the voting was after the SEC championship, he still would have lost. Didn't matter. It did not matter.
Well, then the entire Groza committee can go play in traffic, and if the traffic doesn't take care of them, hopefully they do it with a 9mm because fuck those people.
Yeah, it pissed me off.
Yeah, because I don't know. I heard and I sent a message to Keith. I didn't really know what to say because how do you address somebody that's been just absolutely fucked? Like, how do you address somebody that's been fucked that badly where there's no – because, you know, the committee doesn't care about kickoffs. Like, it's a strictly field goal award. You and I both know that, Clue. Because that's the only thing he could have possibly had over Keith is that he's a really good kickoff guy and Keith doesn't kick off. But there was literally nothing. There was nothing that Rodrigo had over. And, like, I think Rodrigo's a good kicker.
He is.
But there's nothing he had over Keith. You know,
all I know is I'll take our Latino over their Latino any day.
Yes.
Are you kidding me? In the SEC with those fucking Wilson balls, you better believe it.
Absolutely. Oh. All right, Miguel, it was a pleasure having you on. You are a lot to take in, and I hope the listeners, I hope they have a lot of time this week because they might have to rewind and listen to some words, look them up in Merriam-Webster Dictionary to figure out what you're actually trying to say. But I'm pretty used to listening to Miguel talk for hours and hours. I've spent probably 320 out of 365 days, at least 2+ hours with this guy for 4 years straight, and I miss it, and we got to spend another hour here. Is there anything else that you want to say before you, your time on the podcast episode ends?
I just want to say thanks for having me on. I'd like to apologize to all the Hawkeye fans that wanted Keith to win, and then he got fucked. Go Hawks. And that's really about it.
That's it.
Thank you again.
Absolutely. Miguel, it was great. Drake and I.
It's an absolute pleasure, my guy.
Drake and I are about to record another episode of the Drake and
I got to walk my dog first.
Okay, that's fine. I need a little break too. And that's it. Miguel Racinos, an hour plus long. You're welcome to all the listeners for if you made it through this whole thing. Just congrats to you. You're smarter for it, and we hope you enjoyed the episode. That's it. Hawks by a million. We'll catch you next time.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.